Today, ACCC versus the future. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a bit of philosophy on the side. Today, I'm joined again by Salvatore Bobones. Hello there.
Hi, Martin. I don't know if this one counts as philosophy or perhaps virtual property.
Well, it's trying to stand back and asking what's really going on. You know, philosophy is, as I've explained before, a wonderfully broad school a way of thinking, asking that next question, right? Because I tell you, there's a lot of people who just sort of take the top line and never actually think about what is the really so what, right? And I think this is an example of you really need to understand the so what's. And we're here, we're talking the ACCC and the Google thing, right? And what's going to happen in terms of all of that discussion. So let's sort of take it step by step. Let's first of all explain what's gone on. And then let's talk about the consequences and come down into some of those more philosophical points.
Right. Well, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission had a digital services review, digital platforms review, and a lot of recommendations came out of that to improve privacy for Australians going online, about saving the Indigenous news industry, saving the Indigenous arts and TV production. There's a lot of detail. And to be honest, I haven't gone with a fine-tooth comb through the entire report and its recommendations. But the recommendations went to government at the end of last year. And now is when government's picking it up. Government would have picked it up sooner, I think, if it weren't for the coronavirus epidemic. And now government is picking it up and starting to ask about legislation.
Right. And is that part of this is this question of who's going to pay for what in the future, isn't it?
Well, it's more than that. I mean, if we start with, well, the headline news has been Google versus News Corp. Yeah. You know, and the irony of Google calling News Corp a media giant, when by Google standards, News Corp is a tiny minnow in the ocean of news. But the question is, should Google have to pay for those snippets of news that it features on Google News to draw people in? And not just Google, Facebook as well, Twitter, you know, any platform that uses the news. Now, I've heard this myself at conferences. I've heard publishers demanding that their number one, and I had a publisher in Europe tell me their number one priority was getting the European Union to require payments for news snippets. They thought that, you know, the availability of news snippets was putting them out of business. Who needs to read a newspaper when you can get all your news from, you know, just looking at Google? And I pushed back and I said, but you freely give those snippets to Google. That is, you're providing these snippets for free as a tool to reel in viewers and to reel in readers. Just don't provide them. I mean, any news organization is completely at liberty to simply not provide news snippets. Yet they do provide them. Well, the question then becomes, are these actually worth something? Google's not willing to pay for them. The only country in the world I know of where the news snippets have had a dollar amount or a euro amount put on them by the government is Spain. And when Spain said that Google, Facebook, etc. had to pay for news snippets, Google just stopped covering the news. And reasonably enough, I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, if I were a news organization, or I'm sorry, if I were an internet search engine or a social media platform operating in a country where they made me pay for snippets, not where I could negotiate snippet rates with publishers, but where it was simply the law, I just cover news from somewhere else. I mean, Australians going to the news, do they absolutely want News Corp or, Nine News, or is really CNN and Fox News enough for them? And if that international news is enough, well, then Australia just won't get in the news.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because Google has actually been sending me messages, you know, because I have a YouTube channel, right, and saying this is actually threatening, you know, my income. right? Because essentially they'll have less money coming through the system. And they talk about it essentially changing the availability of information so that they are actually raising within their own channels this to quite a high level. And so obviously they think it's a significant issue.
And one concern is that if they have to pay, they would only cover the top news and they wouldn't cover news from, you know, from less traffic generating sites. But I think the broader issue is just that this is a, this is very much a populist agenda of let's sock it to the big foreign internet giants. And it sounds very appealing. I mean, why not save the Australian news by making Google pay for it? And the answer is that, I mean, I'm sorry, I know this is not a, this is not a message people want to hear, but Google is doing you a favor when it covers your material. I mean, as someone who's tried to break into the consciousness with my own website, with my own publishing, it is so hard to get anyone to care about what you write on the internet. And you know, if Google's going to feature that and put it out there, if anything, I mean, if there were an absolutely free market in news snippets, if there was no government intervention, but if Google didn't fear public relations problems, if it was just a free bidding market, would Google pay for your news or would you pay Google? I suspect news organizations would be paying Google to cover their news. And the only reason they don't pay Google is that then it would come up as an ad on Google. And we require, you know, Google, some countries it's required, some countries it's voluntary codes, but ads are marked on Google as advertising material. And so they don't pay Google for it. But if it were truly just a market and ads were not being noted as ads, those news organizations would be paying for the placement, not being precious about being paid. And this is, I think, part of a broader debate over the value of our data online. I mean, there's a lot of pressure, especially from, I mean, Andrew Forrest has funded this new internet initiative across four universities based at the University of Western Australia. Mindaroo, is that the name of the his organization? And they're really pushing this narrative that, you know, internet giants should be paying us for our data. It's our data. We own it. And it shouldn't be going away for free. You know, I encourage everyone out there to think just how much is your address worth to somebody? Just how much is it worth to somebody to know what TV show you watched last night? It is worth such a tiny fraction of a cent. And on top of that, it is only valuable if someone has a full range of other information about you, including the network of how you're connected to other people. That is, the byte of data in itself is essentially worthless. In context of a large data gathering operation, okay, it might have some minimal value, but the idea that the idea that we will all be receiving paychecks by for making our data available, I think is just flatly ridiculous. And if you don't want your data out there, I mean, I ask people to consider how many of you are right now using ad blockers. Now, I don't use an ad blocker. Many people do. If you use an ad blocker, it means that you won't see ads. You know, most simple banner ads and other sort of pop-ups, things like that are blocked by ad blockers. Well, you know, if it's not even important enough to you to use an ad blocker, or to put another price on it, a VPN. You know, for $10 a month, I don't know, Martin, what's the rate for VPNs these days? Is it
about that? Yep.
Yeah, $10 a month, you can get a virtual private network. If you get a VPN, no one's collecting your data. Now, if you're not right now browsing through a VPN all the time, I don't mean just when you go to a pornographic website, or if you're trying to get Netflix in a country where you don't have a subscription. I mean, just using a VPN for browsing. If you're not using a VPN, that suggests your privacy probably isn't worth $10 a month to you. And I'm sorry to go on and on. Let me just even put that one step further. I have a VPN. I don't use it because I want Google and other websites to recognize who I am when I go to them. I don't want to constantly be logging in again. I don't want to, my preferences constantly be unknown. I want to be tracked. Now, maybe I'm a bit strange in recognizing that what I want is to be tracked. Other people think I want relevant content. I want the site to be responsive. I want the site to give me the damn weather in the place where I am, not the weather somewhere else. Well, if you want all those things, then well, I'm sorry. What you want it to be is tracked. There's value to you in being tracked, as opposed to value to the company that's tracking you.
Mm. So I think there's a couple of interesting observations there. The first is I actually am more on your side of the argument as well, because I actually think that the benefits of being able to, you know, that you get from being connected and being able to effectively have information served that is relevant and appropriate, et cetera, is actually way worth the alternative, which is effectively completely agnostic and therefore, you know, anything or nothing happens and you never know where. So I agree with that. I think the other point is that people, I think, should be able to make a positive decision whether to or whether not to share data. And in some cases, data seems to be being harvested without people really realizing it. And I got an issue with that. But generally,
I'm going to push.
Yeah, go on, push.
Yeah, I'm going to push back on you even there, because I spent a year in Europe last year, and Australia has some data privacy regulation where you have to constantly be clicking buttons. Okay, I accept. Okay, I accept. In Europe, it's much more aggressive. Which meant that in a year in Europe, every website I visited all the time, my first action was to say, yes, I accept your data provisions. Now, I never read, I mean, actually, I did read one of those data provisions just because I was curious intellectually what I was signing up to. But we click it all the time.
Yeah.
Now, that's slowing down everybody's browsing experience across an entire continent in Europe constantly because you're constantly having to click that button to get the banner away. Plus, many non-European websites don't work because they, you know, for example, in Europe, you can't read the Chicago Tribune. Now, how many people in Europe want to read the Chicago Tribune? Not many. So few. And advertisers in the Chicago Tribune are not trying to reach European audiences. So there's no economic incentive for the Chicago Tribune to comply with European data regulation. What should they do? Well, just don't provide the Chicago Tribune in Europe, right? And I think as we add more and more data regulations, what we're going to see is more and more of the internet just isn't available to you because it doesn't pay for someone in, you know, someone running a Vietnamese language website in Vietnam. It doesn't pay for them to comply with Australian data regulations. And as a result, Vietnamese Australians won't be able to read that website, or academic researchers who wanted to research on what's going on in Vietnam. We'll have to get a VPN in order to even see the site. Right? And I think that's what, I mean, yes, you want to know what's being done with your data, but you really want to have to make an explicit agreement every single time you go to a website? Or couldn't we just say that every time you go to a website, you know that they're taking your data and you agree to it?
Well, I think that's the way to do it. So, you know, I think that there should be almost a global setting that says, you know, do you want to be able to go around free and basically, you know, share information? Or do you want to be asked, right? Or so that at least there's an option.
Oh, but there is a global setting, and that global setting is in your browser, right? Yep. So you can just set your browser not to provide any of this data.
Correct.
You can set your browner to deny all cookies. So why does someone have to ask me, is it okay to put a cookie on, when if I really cared, I could have the cookie-free experience?
And that's my point. So I think they're going about this the wrong way, right? It seems to me that the way to empower individuals is essentially select a global option, right? And then basically, have the choice. What I don't want is, like you, every time I go somewhere to have to jump through another two hoops before I can actually get to where I want to get to, because that just slows down the whole thing and basically makes it. And the other point is, if in fact there is extra compliance put on companies around the world, then we're going to, the internet becomes a little series of nets in different locations with bits of content, rather than the vision, which was to basically make as much information as freely available to as many people all around the world in as many languages and in many cultures for the greater good. And if we steer away from that, then we're actually disappear, you know, the original intent of what this was trying to do is being degraded, and I'm worried about that. The other is you end up with more and more control of the bit of the story that you see. And I then get quite worried about, well, how much influence then will local government policies go to in terms of what you see and what you don't see, right? And is it effectively a way of introducing more censorship into the way the internet actually displays information? And is that what we also want? Because that takes me into an authoritarian future that I'm not interested in.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm much more pragmatic in my concerns. That Balkanized internet already exists. There's a Chinese internet. There's a Russian internet. There's an Iranian internet. There is a European Union internet that is very different. I'm not kidding. It's very different. We get into that in a minute. And then there's a global internet that everyone else is on. And the European Union internet is slowly diverging from the rest of the global internet because of the very heavy hand of regulation in the European Union that, that is diverging. Think, for instance, of Netflix. Right. So Australia is right now talking about putting Australian content laws on digital streaming services like Netflix, like Disney, you know, all of the services. The Australian content laws for TV are, I believe, 55% of daytime TV has to be Australian content for broadcast TV. Is that right? I think that's
There is a certain hurdle, although they get around it by having an Australian introducer introducing, and then they can show foreign content to the
high. So there are ways to get around it. But the point there is that in exchange for the airwaves, in exchange for being able to broadcast and have the spectrum, you have to provide Australian content, fair enough. Because broadcast is limited to 24 hours a day, I mean, you can't broadcast on any particular piece of spectrum more than 24 hours a day, you can apportion a percentage of that has to be Australian content. And whether that's good policy or bad policy, at least it can be, it's implementable policy. When you tell Netflix they have to carry 30% Australian content, that doesn't mean they have to provide more Australian content. It means they have to provide less global content.
Yep.
Right? They have to bring down the denominator more than they have to raise the numerator. And so what these content laws mean is that a company like Netflix or Disney will give you the top US hits and a lot of Australian content you may or may not want, but they certainly won't give you shows in Hindi. They won't give you shows in Vietnamese. They won't give you shows in Nigerian. You know, all the other markets in which they operate globally. In the US, you get all of them. Right, no problem. Now, the European Union has come up with a clever way of getting around that. They used to have the 30% local content rule in the European Union. They realized this wasn't working. They're now moving towards a new solution, which is 25% of revenue generated in the country must be spent on local content. Okay, that defeats this first easy way around. But then it means, of course, it's effectively just a tax on media, which means, again, you get less, you get taxed more. I mean, Netflix in Europe is €8 for the most basic plan, which carries less content than the $10 plan in Australia. So €8 is about 13 Australian dollars. So you're paying more in Europe for less content because of the way it's regulated. And of course, we could multiply these examples. Now, look, it may not be fair. I mean, if you want to get back to the philosophy part, is it fair that a sovereign country must make sacrifices if it wants to regulate its media space? Well, maybe not. But would I want that regulation? You know, definitely no. I mean, let me ask you a privacy question about you. Should you be able, you said, well, individuals should make these choices. Should you be able to take your home off Google Street View? If you want privacy, you don't want your home on Street View, can you have it blurred out?
Well, if too many people did that, then the utility of Street View would basically be degraded, wouldn't it? So I'm not sure that's a good outcome. But I know that there are people who feel quite strongly about it.
Yeah. Well, in Germany and Austria, in Germany and Austria, you're allowed to request it.
Yep.
As a result, Google had to suspend its Street View operation. There's still Street View for a small number of streets, and the first ones they started filming in Austria and Germany are there. Everything else, there's no Street View.
Yep.
Now, we can live without Google Street View, but honestly, if it were put to a vote, Martin, I would force you to, I mean, I would vote Martin's house is on Street View if I could have the service for free. I don't pay for this service.
Yep.
It's such an incredibly useful service.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and so it's kind of like sharing germs. I mean, here we are in the coronavirus era. You know, it's very analogous to, do we close down everybody in order that nobody will transmit germs? Or do we accept each other's problems? And, you know, privacy issues really come down to that. But it's my internet experience is improved by you sharing your data.
Mm. No, I think that's true. Now, so, but does this then come back ultimately, do you think, to a fight from the existing media players versus the new guys? Because that's the way that this thing has so far been presented. And it seems to me that that's a really quite scrambled argument.
I think that the big media players, I think they have a misvaluation of how much their news is worth. Mm. That is, they seem to really believe that they can get billions from Google, or at least hundreds of millions from Google, for covering the news. And it'd be clear to everybody, Google is not reaching into their websites and showing you, they're showing you, as all of you know who watch, who use Google News, they're just showing you a snippet that News Corp or Nine News or somebody makes available as an advertising snippet. Will they pay for that if they're mandated to? I seriously doubt it. I don't think it's worth that much to them. I mean, I don't want to sound like someone who's has super confidence in massive heartless corporations, but to this small extent, they're really doing a public service. I mean, it's a public service that's done because they want to suck people into their larger ecosystems. But again, this little portion of their ecosystem isn't enough to make a difference. Right now, by performing lots of little services, I mean, Google famously does not really offer, except for YouTube, Google does not offer services in the internet. It offers utilities in the internet. And we all use Google because having all these free utilities cumulatively means a lot to us. Mm. But any one of those utilities has very little value. We'll still use Google. And that's the fundamental kind of network economics behind all of this. I don't think that if they get their law, I don't think the Australian media companies will make a cent from Google, but we'll all lose. And ultimately, so will they, because they'll lose traffic to their sites as well.
Yeah. And I think that's the fundamental point that I would have, is that I think we should be very careful about going down this route, because the unintended consequences could be much more significant than people actually understand at the moment. And there's also this, you know, there is an agenda behind the scenes, which I think is probably quite apparent. And I think we might regret at our leisure the freedoms that we've had with regard to this, and the fact that information has been relatively widely available. And, you know, we've got a very, very broad picture. And I think if we end up with a much narrower picture with less information, less readily available, then we effectively will lose. And I'm not sure, I think I'm with you on that. I'm not sure necessarily that those media players who thought they were going to be paid big bickies for this will be. And so we end up being in a poorer, more fragmented universe, when in fact digitalization is moving apace in the other direction. And, you know, the fact, I think, is that the future of digitalization is more about open sharing and all of those things, rather than actually creating more walled gardens and more hurdles and more barriers and making it more and more difficult to be able to do the things you want to do online. So that's
Need a way to support news. It's just that I don't think this is the way to do it. I mean, I think if we go this way, the ABC will get more traffic, and for Australian news, and for anything that's not Australian, all the traffic will just go to the international news organizations that are not required to pay Google for their news, or pay Facebook for their news, or what have you.
Yep.
Australia needs a better way to pay for news. In my ideal world, I mean, if I were to advise you Australians on what you should do, frankly, I think you should, forgive me, I know this in Australia is considered some kind of terrible thing to say, get rid of the ABC and use the money you're now paying for the ABC to subsidize commercial news. And there are many ways you could subsidize commercial news. In the US, for example, for years before the internet, the government subsidized commercial news by subsidizing mail. So it was much cheaper to, you know, the Postal Service would deliver your magazine or newspaper for a below market rate, thus subsidizing the news. We could subsidize newsprint if you want to see more printed news. The government could make video streams and transcripts available for public meetings. So one thing that's very costly for news organizations is sending reporters to go cover events. Well, what if the government paid to have text transcripts made of every event. Just pay a stenographer to sit there and type. Well, that's not so expensive, but you know, it would really change the economics of the news if they had a searchable text record of every public meeting in Australia. It would also be great for the public as well to have access to those. You know, so there are many things that you can do to make it cheaper and easier for news organizations to cover, especially to cover local news, to cover Australia. Australia doesn't do that. I mean, neither does the US. I mean, I don't know of any country in the world that takes this very proactive approach to making it easier for commercial organizations to cover the news. But you know, that's ultimately the way to do it, I think.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, as always, we ended up in a philosophical debate and discussion, which is actually just what I wanted. So thank you for that. And you've certainly got me thinking differently about this whole question. You know, I was already a bit disconcerted with what I was seeing, and you've just re-emphasized why I was feeling disconcerted. So perhaps we can help to facilitate a better debate on a better basis for a better future. And, you know, ACCC, please consider the future, not just the political voice that's in your left ear at the moment.
I'm here to convert one Australian at a time. There you go, Mark.
Good to talk. Well, next time we'll find another conversation and you can have another conversion. Good to talk to you.
Thanks.
Cheers.